Hello, Mind Bloomers! This is Mind Bloom, the safe space at the intersection of mental health advocacy and breast cancer awareness. Mind Bloom is your podcast. Come back weekly and listen to my guests as they reflect on their close encounters with emotional disorders and breast cancer. Not an easy task, but we promise to make your mind bloom. Hello, Mind Bloomers. This is Marina G, your host, and this is Mind Bloom. Please remember, the content provided by Mind Bloom is not intended to be a substitute for medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Never disregard professional medical advice or delay seeking medical treatment because of any content referenced or authored by Mind Bloom You. Hey guys, hi, hello, and welcome. This is episode 43 of Mind Bloom, and here I am taping it live again on Instagram. It's going straight into my audio editing tool, which is GarageBand, and this is going to be episode 43 tomorrow, every Tuesday, on any podcast platform of your choosing. If you also would like to be a guest on the podcast, if you have a story to tell in terms of your mental health, or a story to tell about breast cancer, yours or a friend, a family member of yours, just reach out. You know where to find me, and we will set up an interview. I would love to have you. You know that you can find me on Instagram, on Twitter, on Facebook, Pinterest, on TikTok, all of the above at MindBloomU. And you can find me on my website as well. It's mindbloomu.com. And where else? YouTube, MindBloom. I would love to interview you, and especially today, which is International Women's Day. So, happy International Women's Day, all of you who've joined. So yeah, it is International Women's Day. And what are you doing to celebrate? Any gifts, any treats, anything in particular, any goals, any intentions you've set up for yourselves this week? Let's hear them. I know what I'm doing this week. I'm continuing to ask you, what do you think is going to happen in my life on April 1st? I know it's going to happen, but I'm not sharing it with you just right away. I just want you to guess. So it's kind of a game. Let's gamify this change, this big change that's going to happen in my life. I'm going to give you a couple of categories so that you can go over them. Could it be a job change? Could it be a new job or something along those lines, a career move, a career change of some sort? Could it be a big move to another state, to another country? Could it be, let me see, my birthday. Oh, my birthday is in October, but great guess. Perfect. Moving. Someone's warm around here. Could it be something to do with my immigration status in the US? Because that alone is a whole novella. Could it be a new pet? I don't know that Bianca would like that, but maybe it's a new pet. So I don't know. Guys, shoot me your ideas, your guesses. Could be a move. Yeah, I see what you have there. Could be a birthday. Sure. Could be an anniversary. Could be a new boo in my life. Would I like that? So just let me know. I'm turning this into a fun game, and I'm loving your answers. And I will love to see your faces when I finally tell you what it is. I'll probably reveal it next Monday on live on Instagram when I'm taping my next episode. So next week, Monday, come in 1:30 Eastern and I'll probably tell you what the new adventure is, the new phase in my life is. So back to International Women's Day. What a beautiful day to celebrate, especially here in New York. It's lovely, it's cold, but it's lovely. I already went for a walk in the park, a big, long, meditative walk of about an hour, and it was good. It was so good to be just surrounded by trees in the woods, and I was able to greet my Monday and greet the beginning of a new week, especially now that I have so many little pieces of the puzzle to put together due to this big change of mine. So that was so restorative, and I want to know what it is you did as well. I also would love to celebrate some women that are role models to me and that mean so much to me. So throughout the week, I'll be doing this. And today, now, I want to celebrate my grandma, my maternal grandmother, whom I've lost about 20 years ago, and not a day goes by that I don't think about her and that I don't miss her tremendously. And I want today to celebrate her and bring her to the fore and to share her with you. My grandma was an excellent cook. She was an excellent baker. Her kitchen smelled of freshly baked goods all of that time. She always had these new recipes that she wanted to try, and she loved the look on our faces as we ate her food, her goodies. She would make my special dishes every time I visited. She would make, she would ask me, and she would then make them for me, or even in preparation for our vacation together, she would just lay out what it is that she would be cooking or preparing. Let's do this, let's do that. And I would know in advance that so many comfy, comfort foods were expecting me, as well as so many hugs and just comfort all over. In my tummy, in my heart, everywhere. So when I lost her, it was, of course, a big shock. It was also an overnight thing, so no one was expecting. No one ever is, right? And it's sad. It's a sad moment, of course, to both remember someone you love very much and you've lost. And at the same time, it's like a rebirth. It's like they're back here when every time you talk about them, every time you mention them. So we're talking about my grandmother today, my maternal grandma, and I'm celebrating her on this International Women's Day. I'm sure she'd be happy to be here, happy to listen to my podcast. She doesn't speak English. She didn't speak English. Maybe she does now in heaven, but she didn't. And so she'd be just, what are you talking about? But she'd be so, so proud. So proud. If I told her about my big news, the big thing that's going to happen later this month that I'm not telling anyone, but I'm asking everyone to guess what it is. So I'm sure that if I told her what it is, she'd be like, you go, Marina. That's exactly what it is. And if it weren't for, my age or, some excuse, I would do the same and I would be there with you the same. who knows? Who knows how she would have adapted to Skype and Zoom and all of those things? Who knows how she would have adapted to the pandemic? Would she be cooking more? Would she be cooking less? I wonder. But let's celebrate. Let's stay in this celebration mode and think that I have never been alone since when she was here, but also ever since she left. I know she's looking after me and watching me from up above. We like to say in my family that she's our little star. She's our little star in our family. She's our estrelinha. She's this beam of light up there, guiding me, giving me patience and resilience, and telling me that everything's going to be all right. That this moment may be tough, whatever moment it is, but that it's going to be better, it's going to get better. She taught me to be a strong woman. She was the one always telling me to, whatever I did, finish your studies first. Don't even think about getting married before you graduate. Don't even think about kids until you graduate. And she must have jinxed it for me because I did end up not getting married until after my PhD. And kids, no, it's just Bianca. So she may have jinxed it a little bit, but just to say that she gave me so much autonomy and independence and, you know, free. Just she planted this seed, this idea of freedom and of feminism that we can be, we can do, and we can achieve whatever it is we design for our lives. So I did go and graduate, and I did go and graduate from my master's and then the PhD. And only then did I get married. So I think that's what she meant. When she meant graduate, I think, okay, she was like, okay, 20 years down the road. Oh, okay, sure. I now look back and thank her and say, Grandma, you were right all along. It's about us first, and it's about feeling successful, feeling that we can do it on our own, that it's not that we don't need anybody else. I mean, interdependence is beautiful. It's really a miracle if two human beings can be interdependent. But it's also beautiful to think that in our core, we can do it and we can achieve things. So whatever move or big change or big job, big love, whatever it is that I keep announcing and I want you guys to guess, whatever it is that's going to happen at the end of this month of March, I will be doing it by myself, not alone. Not from a place of loneliness, not that from a place of stubbornness and resentment, but from a place of decision, of self-respect and choice, and just knowing that I have the power right here, right here, right here in these hands is the power to change things. Whatever they are, could be so simple. Could be, it doesn't have to be a big, big change like the one I'm going through at the end of the month. It could just be a walk in the park like I did this morning. I could have chosen to stay home in bed, or I could have gone to the park and walk for about an hour. And I chose the latter. The walk, the exercise, the fresh air, the meditation as I'm walking, the deep breaths in and out as I was walking. So as we celebrate International Women's Day, and a big I love you to my friend Connie and my friend Joanna who are watching now, I wish you a beautiful, empowering International Women's Day today. and again tomorrow, and the next day, and the next day, and the next day, and all the 365 and 66 days of the year. We have to dance it off every day. We have to celebrate ourselves every day. We have to remember that we're the bravest and that we're not alone. We are not alone. We have each other. We are this huge community, huge, huge, huge community of strong, strong women capable of anything. All right, my dears, I will talk to you next week. I love you all so much. Have a beautiful International Women's Day. Hi, Leslie. Hello, and welcome to Mind Bloom. How are you today?
Oh, I'm great, and thank you so much for having me.
Oh, it's my big, big pleasure. I know for a fact that I'll learn so much from you today, and I know that the audience is going to take so many things away from this conversation. I thank you so much for making the time. I would like to ask you, as an icebreaker, what makes your mind bloom, Leslie?
So many things, but what I'll talk about today is the very idea, the very concept that anyone with mammary glands can get the breast cancer screening that they need to have for their own body. So right now we kind of have a one-size-fits-all type of approach, mammogram. And it's great for some people, and really not good at all for others. So the idea that we could all in the future be treated as individuals and screened as individuals based on what we need instead of a one-size-fits-all approach. And the concept is out there, but we're not really close to that. And so the idea that we could actually get there makes my mind blown.
We will get there. We will get there. Mm-hmm. One podcast episode at a time, but we will get there. And one book. It's okay. And one book at a time as well. And speaking of books, you are a published author. Your book is called Probably Benign, which is my nightmare, my everyday. That's what I live with. So please tell us more about Probably Benign. Where can we find it? Where did this idea come from for our audience at home who don't, you know, probably know you yet? And then please tell us a little bit about your story. I know we're going to be talking a lot about breast tissue density, and that's exactly where I want to explore today.
Correct. So in November 2017, I was diagnosed with stage 4 breast cancer 2 months after an all-clear mammogram and ultrasound. Shock of my life, of course. I won't go into it because it's too long of a story, but found in a very odd roundabout way that ultimately we got to that diagnosis. But through that whole process, wondering how this could have happened, How was it possible? I learned a lot. Mm-hmm. And what I basically learned is that if you have dense breasts, mammograms are not enough screening, and sometimes not even an ultrasound. And that's what happened to me. And that it's not just me. There's a lot of other women out there. Approximately half of us have this issue. So I learned all about that over a period of months. And it really kind of nagged at me. It became a calling. What can I do? How can I take this really bad situation that I'm now in and do something with it? How can I turn a bad thing into a good thing? So I was trying to figure that out, and I'd always wanted to walk the Camino de Santiago, which is an ancient pilgrimage across the top of Spain. And so I decided I was going to do that, and I was going to do it by myself, and I was going to take about 40 days, and I was going to figure this out, right? And so I did that, And I got very solidified as every walking day went on about what it is I wanted to do. And so the book is about that. It starts the day that I leave on the, you know, walking on the Santiago on the first day, and it ends on the 40th day. But it's not really a chronicle of every day. It's not a diary, but it talks about, you know, it sort of uses as metaphor the walking journey to my journey and the journey of breast cancer screening. So I always laugh and I say, you know, I'm never going to get accused of plagiarism because who's done that before, right? It's a little bit of a unique story, but that's okay. A little bit about the title. Probably benign. As you say, it's kind of a nightmare. And I thought it really embodied what's going on in breast cancer screening. Because we get mammograms every now and then. Sometimes we get ultrasounds. And we're stuck in this world of really not knowing. Probably, maybe, sometimes, oh, let's watch and see if it grows. Come back in 6 months. So many people are on this hamster wheel of not really knowing. And it's because of the technology that we keep using. And so I thought it really embodied, you know, where we're really at. And 15 years ago or so, I did get a probably benign, you know, result from a mammogram when I went back, and they said, oh, it, you know, all good, nothing wrong. And so off we go. And so I wonder, even today, if that's related to what I have now. It might not be, but it might be. See, here again, probably we don't know. So that's why I named the book what I did.
Mm-hmm. Just to clarify, your breast cancer is not de novo. It is
de novo.
It is de novo.
Yeah, it is de novo. Yeah. That issue 15 years ago was resolved.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, best mm-hmm. we know, you know, and it is de novo, which is kind of around 6% of all breast cancer diagnoses.
Yes. And that is the shock of the shocks, like you were saying. I mean,
It really is. But the book and the journey and everything has really led me to where I am now. Back to the original question, what makes your mind blown? You know, this is what I want us to get to. And baby steps, you know, mm-hmm. the first thing we really have to get to is women knowing whether they have dense breasts or not. A lot of women don't even know that. They might know they're dense, but they don't know what it means.
Yes.
Yeah. You know, so we have so much work to do. And I believe that this going from where we are now to where we really need to be with every woman having the screening that she needs is going to come from us.
Okay.
I think it's going to come from us. And I've had doctors and radiologists tell me that. Hmm. If you want something different, you are going to have to push for it. The system is unlikely to do it for you.
Right. I mean, you're paying for the system. Might as well serve you, isn't it?
So I heard that. You know, I was like, all right, then game on. Then that's what we'll do. And so that's kind of what I'm dedicated to now.
Yeah, okay, beautiful. Yeah. So let's talk about dense breasts. I've heard my whole life the expression dense breasts. My grandmother had them. My mom, her sisters, everybody, myself. What it means to the touch to me, for instance, is that everything and nothing could be breast cancer. The advice to self-exam, and please, I'm not saying don't self-exam. I'm just saying that in my case, it's a little bit counterintuitive and also spikes my anxiety extremely. Because I feel many, many things going around my chest area. My reports, I was telling you in the beginning, my medical reports do say extremely breast tissue. But I saw the word extremely, and I don't know what this means. What does that mean? Is there something higher than extremely, immensely? What exactly does this mean? So I thought extremely meant a lot, which I already knew. Like, I can feel the density. I can feel it. It feels like lumps. And then, of course, probably benign. Yes, it's probably nothing. It's suspicious, but it's probably nothing. Until one day it was something. We can talk about my story later. And I know everybody at home has heard this a million times. So let's break down dense breasts and dense breast tissue. What is this? Half the women have it. What does this mean? Let's start from the very beginning.
Let's start from the beginning and talk about what density is. So our breasts are really made up of two basic things: fat and all of the other things in our breasts, the lobules, the ducts, the fibroglandular tissue that allow us to give the milk. It's really what our breasts are for, right? That's what they're there for. And sexualized as they become, that's what it really is. And so those two basic category of things are in our breasts. So the more fat you have, the less dense you are. The more fibroglandular tissue you have, the more dense you are. And the problem is this glandular tissue is white on a mammogram. That's what you saw.
So
is cancer. So if you've got what they call a fatty breast, completely fatty breast, which is only about 10% of women, if you have a white dot in there, that's cancer, it shows up beautifully. And so that's why mammography is perfectly fine for those women. But if you're somebody with extremely dense breast, you know, on the other extreme, it's like trying to find a white bunny in a snowstorm. Nobody can do it. You can look all you want. You can try as hard as you want. You just can't see it. And so that's why I always say it's not the person reading the images. It's the technology itself, right? Because you can't expect anybody to see something that's not really seeable. And then the very fatty woman, you know, the breasted woman and the extremely dense breast woman are the two extremes. And then most people really lie somewhere in the middle. You know, they're kind of dense, but not completely dense. And there are four categories: A, which is your completely fatty, scattered fibroglandular density, which is still considered not dense. Mm-hmm. Heterogeneously dense, which is pretty dense, but not extremely. And then your extreme. Oh. So it's like 10, 40%, 40%, and 10% on average. But premenopausal women are skewed to density. So that 10, 40, 40 is what I gave you for all women, kind of like 40 to 80. But premenopausal, we're more dense than we are after menopause, okay, which kind of exacerbates the problem. But here's the real kicker to the whole thing. The more dense you are, the higher your risk of getting breast cancer.
Yeah.
That's what people don't know. They've heard of density. They don't really know. They might know I'm dense, but they don't know how dense. And they also really don't know that the density is very much a risk factor in and of itself. Couple that with the fact that mammography can't really see through density, and that's the nightmare. That's the problem right there. Mammography is not serving the higher risk people when you look at density as a risk.
I had never... That's amazing that you say that. I had never heard that... Or rather, I'm going to say it differently. Doctors always appeased me and said breast density is not a risk for breast cancer. It's rather that we can't find it very well. And, you know, so.
That's not true. That's not true. Mm. There are many, 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 many studies out there of, you know, thousands of women that will tell you that that's not true. It is a risk.
It makes perfect sense that it is a risk. Yeah, because you have so many changes happening monthly over the years. Not to mention the reception of estrogen is probably much higher in our case as well. And see, as well, no one ever explained to me that extremely dense is the highest level of the spectrum. No one.
It's the highest level of the spectrum. And a woman with extremely dense breasts is 4 to 6 more times likely to get breast cancer than someone on the total other end of the spectrum. Yeah, it's a risk factor. And that's what people don't really understand, because that hasn't been talked about. And exacerbates the whole issue of mammography.
Did you know you had dense?
I knew I had dense breasts, but I was like everybody else.
Yeah.
I didn't really know what it meant because it wasn't explained. And I live in one of those states where you get the notification because the law got passed. And I don't really remember the exact words of the letter, but here's what I read. Here's what I internalized. You have dense breasts. Mammography might not find it. Not our fault. Sorry.
Okay.
That's what I read. I read it right. As a CYA letter. Right. That's what I read. And I was like, oh, whatever.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. But where I live, they do systematically screen a lot of dense breast women with ultrasound. And I got that. They called me back. Nothing wrong. We just want to do some additional. Did that. And it was fine too. And we apparently have one of the, you know, the better technicians around, and I don't doubt it. It's just that, again, if you can't see it, no one can. You know, it's not an individual fault. It's the technology. Back to the technology.
Right.
We're using a technology on these women, us, that is inferior for us.
Yeah. So what's interesting in your advocacy is that you're not saying mammograms should be excluded, ultrasounds, don't even think about it. No. You're saying we're not cookie cutter. This should not be a cookie cutter practice.
Yes.
And we should be seen as individuals.
Yeah. So extremely dense breast women or somebody who's at high risk for a lot of reasons. You know, there could be a lot of reasons why you're high risk. You know, they are now being given MRIs.
Yes.
Breast MRIs. And that's a good thing because MRI is highly sensitive. There are a lot of false positives, but I'd rather have a false positive than a lot of false negatives, you know? At least you're finding it, you're checking it out. So they're getting that. But there's a lot of people that aren't extremely high risk or wouldn't qualify for that MRI. They're expensive. That are not getting what they need. So there's this big gap in the middle where your average woman with dense breasts, and that's a lot of us, are being left out of what we need. You know, everybody follows the standard, which is just mammography. But then you do have other doctors and other practices that go above and beyond the standard. Yes. So does your doctor do that or not, you know, and how much, and what are their thoughts, and what do they know about, what have they been told? It's very individualized after you get on the standard.
Yeah. So what should a woman now listening at home, they know they have dense breast tissue, because they read it in a report somewhere. And what do they do? What should they do?
They should learn about density. They should learn how dense they are and understand what that means. And then, even though we don't always get the result we want, start talking to their doctors about additional screening. So when I said before, you know, it's gonna have to come from women to make changes, I believe that if every woman becomes educated and they speak to their doctor and they say, hey, look, I have extremely dense breasts, or I have dense breasts, and I know a mammogram, even a 3D mammogram, is going to find not nearly all the cancers that might be there. What else do you have for me? And they become dissatisfied with this, you know, become dissatisfied with what you're getting. And then advocate for what it is that you want to have and insist and persist until you get it. And we're all going to have to do this. We're all going to have to do it in our own way, because some of these advanced technologies, some people can't have, you know, there's pros and cons to all of them. We are going to have to make those decisions ourselves, because no one is helping us make them. in any mass kind of way. There are a few practices out there that do, but not very many.
Mm-hmm. And about this scale from not to extremely, are there any changes being anticipated, would you imagine?
Well, right now, there's the names that I mentioned, fatty, scattered density, heterogeneously density, or extreme. So there are four categories. And the layperson can call that A, B, C, or D. So you can do a D since you're extremely dense. I got a chuckle out of a doctor that I know that put out on LinkedIn the other day, hey, let's move on and leave the A, B, C, Ds for the kindergartners. So what he was talking about there is there are these software packages, kind of like artificial intelligence. It's going to take your mammogram images, especially a 3D mammogram, and come up with a volumetric density.
Yeah.
And so that's kind of the next step with that. But for now, it's those four names and the four letters.
I mean, it couldn't be so hard to do a volumetric exam. We're going to Mars in no time.
Well, that's what I say. We can put a little Land Rover on Mars and remote control it from here. Are you kidding? Why can't we do this? And why can't we do it in a systematic way for everyone?
Yeah.
Right? It doesn't make sense if you look at it that way.
Yeah. Besides, preventing breast cancer has got to be cheaper than treating breast cancer.
Oh, yeah. Some of these screening tests are, $300-$500. But what it costs to treat cancer and some of the drugs at stage four, holy moly, well over $100,000 a year.
Yeah.
That your insurance company will wind up paying if you have good insurance.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's another story. Right? It's astronomical. And so we've got work to do to get us where we need to be.
Are there symptoms, I guess, for density? Is there something you can tell?
No, not really. Not really. It's really the only way to find out how dense you are is to get a mammogram. And it's in the report.
Mm-hmm.
It must be in the report by law.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes it's not as spelled out as we'd like it to be. But that's really the only way. That's why mammography is sort of this entry point of this dream that I have about the individualized screening. Because that would be one fork in the road. Yeah. So if you're not dense, you can see it pretty well, and that's good for you. And that's awesome because it's everywhere and it's cheap and it's standard of care. Great. Yeah. But if you're not, then you need to take another fork in the road.
Right. So your first mammogram should be this volumetric exam, really. And then you're tiered.
That's where
it's a triage.
It's a triage. That's where I think we will be headed. And it won't just be density that helped make that decision. It will be other things too. Family history. Do you have any, there's all these other things that enter into it. But density is a big factor simply because of what we can see and what we can't see.
All right. This is so incredible, especially in my case, I've taken it always so lightly. My grandmother has it, my mom has it. Yeah. It's just part of life.
I hear you when you say, what am I looking for in the self-exam? Even after I was diagnosed, the doctor at the Mayo Clinic was the only one who could feel it. And I tried to feel it afterwards, right where he said it was. And I couldn't tell the difference between the one that it was in and the one that it wasn't in. Yeah. I couldn't tell. Because as you say, there's all kinds of stuff in there.
Yeah.
I'm not saying don't do self-exams. A lot of people have found their cancers that way.
Yes.
Many, 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 many. And ones who have had mammograms and never found it. So, yes, but it's not like easy. I don't think it's easy. And it's not 100% conclusive either, that's for sure.
Yeah. Yeah, nothing we're saying here is definitely scientific. This is how you should do it. I mean, I've met women, I've interviewed women who had 12-centimeter breast cancers, and they could not feel it. I kid you not, especially when it's lobular, it's very intricate.
Mine was lobular, but as it turns out, it was maybe about this big, size of an egg, 3x5.
It's huge. It's huge.
But I don't feel it at all.
Oh, wow. Oh, yeah, I see what you see. Oh.
You know, because it's not, lobular doesn't make this hard lump.
No.
I mean, any hard lump that size, I would certainly, but it doesn't make.
It's like fibrous, right?
Yeah. And people will go, oh, well, yeah, lobular. And I'm like, don't overwhelm me. That's 10 to 15% of the cancers and growing.
Mm-hmm.
No, oh, well, that's too many women.
Besides, I believe, and I heard this from the medical community, they are less educated in lobular than in ductal.
They are because it's less prominent.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's a lack of research on it.
Yeah. So we got all the things going for us here.
Oh,
density. We got the jackpot.
That's right. We hit the jackpot.
It's unfortunate. I guess I guess we need to continue doing what we're doing, advocating, waking up, shaking up the communities, both the breast cancer community and the medical community.
We need to send that word out there. Hey.
Yeah.
We deserve more.
Yeah.
We're going to be asking for more. So women, I call it ask, learn, insist, and persist. Ask if you have breast density, if you don't know already. Maybe you don't know how dense. That's important to know. So ask. Learn your options. You know, there are different options everywhere you are. Maybe if you want an option that is somewhere else, consider going. It's not a bad idea.
Second
if you want
opinions.
It and can afford it, et cetera. Mm. And then insist and persist until you get what you want. It's not an easy thing that we're asking women to do because there's pushback. Oh, that's not standard of care. Oh, you don't really need this. And sometimes it's, oh, honey.
You don't have a family history. You're fine.
You don't have a family history. But do you know that over 80% of the breast cancers diagnosed are in women with no family history? So this family history thing, you know, yes, women who have a family history or if they have one of these, you know, gene mutations, 1 to 3% of the population, making up 10% of the breast cancers, yes. If I were one of those people, I'd want to know and pay special attention to. Mm-hmm. And it's 10%. Mm-hmm. We got to look at the other 90 as well. Right? Because the 90 is the bigger number.
Us, yeah.
Right. So there's a lot of myths out there. There's a lot of, you don't have a family history. Mm-hmm. Never mind. Mm-hmm. We've got to break through all of that. And it's not easy.
Mm-hmm.
But this hamster wheel that so many women are on, and when somebody says, oh, let's wait 6 months and see if it grows, that drives me nuts. Because let's think about that for a minute. Does that really make sense? Not to track it down now when it might be cancer and left to grow and spread. We don't know how fast that cancer is growing, if it is. It's a nutty thing. And, you know, then you've always got in the back of your mind, do I or don't I?
Should I have acted upon this? Should I have done this?
Then the backwards thinking, oh, that was a mistake. Oh, I should have. Well, I mean, we're just all part of a system that's doing this right now. Right?
Yeah.
So, yeah, we need to get to a better day.
Mm-hmm.
Really do.
Well, thank you so much, Leslie. I really appreciate it. I look forward to reading probably Benign, which is my name all over it.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
Absolutely. It's a pleasure.